Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, the show where we talk nuts and bolts of making comics. And today I am joined once again by Philip Seavey, who joined us way back in what seems many years ago now for episode 195, where we talked about canceling conventions, creator impact, and what you know, you were thinking moving forward. And I'm just looking at the reference here on 195. It says, Philip joins Andy and Joey to talk about the cancellation of ECCC and other cons.
Five years ago in March.
Which does seem a lifetime ago. Philip, thanks for doing this.
No, thanks for having me back on. It's great to be here.
But it was one of those things where we were talking about, well, what can we do? And thinking about someone, you know, you came on the show and talked about working artists and conventions and just general planning and moving forward and what to think. And I don't know how much, you know, you want to get in with what has changed, or it's one of those where I still feel like so much of this is like, well, what do you want to make it about? Like, we could talk about what has happened. We could talk about what's going to happen, talk about where things are now. But, you know, kind of thinking about this audience as far as, you know, Make Comics listeners, as folks that are different levels of making comics, doing creator own stuff, looking to do work for hire stuff, maybe through that prism is, you know, somebody like you that teaches through CE. You've got the January visual class coming up, obviously doing pencils. I don't know if you and I have talked since I got the house and read the house, but I really like the house. I'm going to encourage anybody that likes great horror and moody stuff to look up the house, and Philip will, I'm sure, give us his ways to find him at the end of the show. But just really great comic.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you balance obviously a lot of hats. What's it been like since the last couple of months?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. A lot has happened. And I mean, obviously, I think anyone who's alive right now can say the same. It's been the longest year in history. I think looking at the industry as a whole, post-March, we had the Diamond shutdown, which stopped the distribution of comic books to retailer shops through Diamond channels. And for those who don't know, Diamond is the main distributor for comic book stores and companies. So essentially, if you want to buy a comic book, 99 times out of 100, Diamond is the company who received the shipment from the printer and has distributed it to the comic book store. So they shut down for, I want to say it was like 8 weeks. And so therefore, comic book stores did not have any new product during that time. And that really impacted publishers across the board. I think DC is probably the only publisher that did not stop production of comics in some form or another. Marvel shut down a third to half of the books they were working on. Lots of mid-level and small publishers had, you know, pencils down orders, things like that. So that really changed kind of the professional landscape of comics from the freelance side. I had a couple different projects that were in various stages. One was in a pitch that was supposed to be approved by Emerald City Comic Con. Another one was a pitch that has been approved, and we were going to sit down with the publishers at Emerald City Comic Con and hammer out kind of a time frame as far as when we would start production, when it would be released, etc. With the shutdown and with the cancellation of Emerald City Comic Con, both those projects got put kind of on hold. And then, you know, lots of other people I knew, myself included, the work for hire landscape of comics just kind of froze.
Wow.
There were people. Yeah, lots of projects were getting canceled or things like that. So it was really beginning to impact us across the board as far as like what work there was. And, you know, we talked last time about Emerald City being canceled and how was that going to look for the rest of the year. At this point, no real conventions in the United States have been held in 2020. It is my opinion and belief that I don't think we'll see anything in 2021. Potentially maybe New York Comic Con, because that comes in the fall. And by then there is a possibility of a widespread vaccine, you know, essentially 11 months from now being distributed far enough that large public gatherings like that are safe to be held again. Who knows? But I don't think we'll see any spring shows for sure. I doubt we would have anything by the summer. I think fall next year is the best, but I know people already who are writing 2021 off as far as there's going to be no cons. But we're looking at 2022. Looking ahead and kind of how that impacted stuff, I think you brought up the house, which is, I think, is a really good example of some of the things that we've done this year to try and kind of changed our approach, and it very much tied into Diamond's shutdown. So we, the house is a book that Drew Zucker and I worked on for years, and then we self-published it, and we've essentially been hand selling it since 2018, which is when we the book was printed. And with Diamond shutdown, Drew reached out to a bunch of retailer groups on Facebook and said, "Hey, like, we have the book. Here's a copy of essentially the first 40 pages. If you want to stock it for your store, let us know. We would be happy to send you a book so you have new product." Yeah, and it was a really great move. I'm no longer on Facebook, so I didn't have access to those retailer groups, but Drew did, and I think we probably sold, oh, 300, 400 copies of that book this year, which is the most we've ever sold in a year, and most of that was direct to retailers. There was a period where I was just shipping boxes. Yeah, it was fantastic to get that book out there. Retailers were looking for a new product. I was talking to Jen King, who runs a comic book store in Texas. She does a great shop there, and she said, like, she never slowed down business once during this whole thing because she just began stocking and selling loads of independent and self-published books. Yeah, so like she would hop on every single week on Facebook and a couple of different social media platforms and just do a live stream and be like, "Here's all the books we've got. If you want them, let me know. We'll set them aside for you and sell them." And we would, I think she sold like, 10 copies of the house on air the first weekend or something like that. So yeah, there were a handful of shops that reached out. And there's a shop in Portland that Doug O'Loughlin runs. And Doug, I reached out to him during Triage, a promotion, and he stocked Triage, and they sold all their copies, and his customers really liked it. So when we reached out to Doug about, stocking the house, he was like, "Hey, I loved Triage. It did really well with our customers. Anything you do, I'll be interested in checking out." So he stocked a whole bunch of copies and was like immediate sellouts. We've had some international retailers reach out, and we've shipped them overseas, which is not cheap. And and it eats into retailer profit, but they sold out within hours every time they got a new shipment. So things like that were kind of like, all right, how can we reach out and get this book? And so we've just about sold through our entire print run. And though I can't publicly announce anything, we have a really cool publishing contract with a new publisher to distribute it wide next year.
Oh, fantastic. That's
Yeah,
great.
part of that was I was able to reach out to an editor that I know and have a good relationship with at this company, and was like, "Hey, this is the book we had. Here's the critical acclaim we've got. We have hand sold basically 1,000 copies of it. Would you be interested in printing it, reprinting it? We don't need any advance. Everything's done. All you literally have to do is send it to the printer." And they ran it up the flagpole, and they are happy and excited to publish it next year. So that's a very good thing that's come about, kind of the hustle of this year and how we've been changing and approaching what we do to get our books to people. So yeah, that's one thing. A couple other things I can think of. I know different creators were kind of setting up web stores or doing virtual comic excuse me, virtual comic cons. And that's not something that I really looked into. I think we probably talked about this last time. Conventions and sales in that type of avenue are not where my business model is or my strengths lie. I'm not like a big print guy. Conventions are mainly used for the purposes of networking and meeting new people. For me, I love to just focus on creating stories. That's where I feel my strength is. I'm not like, the world's best salesman. So I spent the majority of this year just working on projects, and these are projects that no one had picked up at the time. But I wanted to utilize the downtime the industry was experiencing and myself personally to kind of work on projects that had been sitting around that I wanted to polish. Spending months and months reworking kind of my drawing approach and style to find something that works, that I was a little bit happier with. And I had a pitch that was the one that got placed on hold at the beginning of the year. And I was like, you know what? At some point, things will get rolling again, and the companies will begin looking at pitches. Let me start to develop this a little bit more so that when hopefully this book gets picked up, I'll have, a couple of months of work already done, and it puts me ahead of the game. So they went from a 120-page graphic novel pitch. And I fleshed it out and I scripted the entire thing, and it ended up closer to 600 pages. So yeah, the danger of just giving me time to flesh out an idea. But I have the first draft of that script is written. I'm in the process of rewriting it. I'm in the process. I've done character designs, environment designs. I'm about 15 pages into the pitch. I've been working with my editor on that, kind of getting it ready as to what is the best, how to approach that from the size of the book. I've talked about different ways I want to approach the printing and the look and the binding and the paper and a lot of room to kind of start to consider. I'm not just at this point up against any type of deadline. But that's one thing that I spent a good majority of the time working on. I did a free comic book that I released this fall. I was looking at, actually, I watched The Old Guard on Netflix, which is an adaptation of the Greg Rucka and Leandro Fernandez image series with Charlize Theron. And I really enjoyed the heck out of it for a Netflix movie. I thought it was really fun and entertaining. And they had just these intricately choreographed fight scenes in the movie, which were exciting. And then I read the comic book afterwards, and all those fight scenes were boiled down to like double page spreads. So instead of like 5 minutes of this really like balletic choreography, it was a smash cut of a bunch of panels of people shooting and punching, which I totally understand that from a comic book standpoint. You do not have the space on the page or in the comic to spend a lot of time on those things. Like, you know, 5 seconds or 5 minutes of this really cool fight scene is 45 pages of comic book. So I was like, you know what, I want to just do a comic that has that space, 20 some odd pages of just a choreographed fight scene, for just a bunch of different reasons, but you just don't usually get to see stuff like that.
Sure.
So that's what I worked on for August, September, maybe part of October. And I was just kind of posting my pages up as I completed them. And then I put it all together and I'm just, you know, I have it up on my Gumroad for free, kind of a pay what you want thing. It's called Fight Zine. It was just, you know, another opportunity to explore and play with style and form and storytelling. And so I've basically just taken this year to use it as a pause to kind of polish up skills and do projects that I didn't have the ability to do before, and treat it kind of like a personal artistic boot camp. I've really changed up stylistically the way I ink and approach, and kind of changing with energy levels and finishing and things that I've wanted to do for years, but have literally took 4 or 5 months of fighting every single day to finally unlock what I was going for. And now it's kind of how I'm approaching all the work going forward. You know, and as the industry kind of came back, I think, you know, early and mid to late May is when Diamond started shipping things again. By August, companies were beginning to kind of roll forward on things that had been put on pause and kind of reassess. And I've got a handful of different projects that have kind of come up since then that I'm working on. And I see things, you know, coming back together in a new approach. I unfortunately saw a lot of series of friends of mine that were working on that because of the COVID shutdown and because of delays and because of companies reassessing their position, they, you know, decided not to move forward with stuff that at one point was approved and sometimes in production. And so, you know, all of us are dealing with it with a changed landscape, but at the same time, you know, it's still comics. We're still creating books. We're still making them. I think a lot of us, myself included, are thinking about how can I change what I'm doing so it's not so dependent upon, you know, a small group of retailers or a small group of publishers, or what are some ways that I can pivot my approach to create longer and more sustainable career options and storytelling. And that's changed my approach, you know, working on, you know, with some media things in Hollywood and film and TV, and it's changing how I approach the stories I'm telling and what publishers I'm going to go to, and looking into literary agents and whatnot. So there's been a big shift in things, but at the same time, we're still in the middle of it all. So who knows when we talk 6 months from now where everything will be.
for sure. And you being somebody that's, you know, for lack of a better description, you know, you're a small business entity, you're a freelancer, you're doing not just the creative with writing, concepting, as well as the art. You know, it's, I know some projects you draw and write, like Triage.
Yeah.
And I'll quickly mention that's from Dark Horse. If folks want to look for that in the store or online, came out earlier this year in trade, and you should definitely check that out. The, you know, life of people that do small business work or contracting work is often what you're describing. And just from getting to know you a little bit in that previous conversation and in and around comics experience-based stuff, you know, you obviously are someone who pays attention to what's going on and has a good grasp of how the industry works. And then this kind of, you know, curveball that so many industries had to redirect, pivot, learn from. You know, it's just this constant almost reinvention. And like you said, 6 months from now, we're still not sure what that looks like. And from the convention standpoint, just hearing you talk about what Emerald City was going to mean in terms of planning new books and what was going to be released when, and that's a chance to see people that you don't see physically a lot and make those connections, even though it might not be something where you're doing a lot of direct selling to folks walking around the con floor. It's the place where you go to run that part of your business. Like a lot of businesses might work on a trade show, and you get to know people and do work from those connections and those, you know, continue and deepen. Have you felt, you mentioned also not having Facebook, have you felt like, I was going to ask earlier too about, I think we've all gone through bouts of like, I'm not feeling real productive today. I don't have a deadline, so I'm just going to do this. Have you felt like there's been a kind of realignment in the way that, obviously big picture, but have you implemented anything that might be a little shareable or translate to other folks as far as this is kind of what I do day to day now, or how I try to think about my week or my month? And
yeah, I really early on, and I've had conversations with other people too, I was entirely not productive. And it wasn't that I was lazy. I literally could not create the uncertainty and trauma and everything that we experienced this year in and out, you know, not just COVID alone, but obviously, you know, as we push forward towards trying to address and move forward with racial inequities and injustice and all these things was a very heavy year across many multiple fronts. And we're not even talking about the environmental and ecological disasters. I've had friends who've lost homes to fires. I've had people who've been evacuated to hurricanes multiple times. And I don't think there are too many people who've not been impacted one way or another by everything that's happened this year. The first couple months, I sat there every day and was like, man, I really wish I could do something, because creativity to me is not just my job. It's also a very helpful outlet for myself in expression. It helps regulate, you know, a lot of different things that I deal with every day. And to be in a stage where I just literally could not draw anything and I could not write anything. And it was very, very difficult at first, but I just kind of had to realign my approach and be a little bit more compassionate and forgiving of myself, understanding like, you know, there will be a tomorrow, hopefully, and maybe then I'll be able to get back to stuff. So after I gave myself a little bit of time to just kind of sit in the moment, I spent a lot of time reading books, listening to podcasts, talking to people, trying to figure out what it is myself as an individual can do and move forward on in addressing things larger than just, you know, comics and my job. After a while of kind of going through that, I started to be able to kind of get back into a groove of things. Kind of allowing myself the understanding like, okay, you know, this X amount of months or this X amount of years, we're just going to have to write this off. We're just going to have to kind of come fresh later on. But there, you know, there will be more, you know, we are all in this boat together. It's a little bit different than if like my entire career collapsed as an individual. As an industry, we collapsed. So we are going to work together to rebuild so I can relax. I found that kind of building even more structures around my day-to-day has really helped me in the productivity phase. I have now kind of divided my days in that after I get up in the morning, get the kids with school, whether it's here or, you know, whether they've been doing in person or online, depending on the month or the amount of cases I have where I live. Once that's kind of taken care of, I'll sit down. I had a space in my backyard, a little pergola where I sat for 2 or 3 hours every morning and wrote. And then I would, you know, move inside, have lunch, usually go for a run. And then once that was done and I cleaned up, and then that would be upstairs to my office where I would sit and draw for the next 4 or 5 or 6 hours. So giving myself a lot of structure in that, you know, this time and this specific place in my house is for this task. And then this time and this specific place is for this task. Has helped me, like I know when I get to a certain spot at a certain time of the day, my brain is ready to write. And I know when I move locations at a different time, my brain is now ready to draw. So creating kind of those structures and kind of that rigidity in my routine has helped kind of tap into kind of like, you know, on-demand creativity even better than it was before. You know, and I've worked, I think this year I've been implementing guided meditation. I've increased the amount of running that I do to try and be very consistent and get out quite a few days a week. There's also therapy. There's lots of things outside of what can I do to draw this cool picture that I've tried to implement in my life to create a healthier space. Obviously, there's lots of things outside of our control right now. As much as we can do our part to contribute to positive things, there's nothing you or I can do to, to progress the vaccine for COVID-19 or something like that. So what things can we do individually in our lives that can, create a sense of peace or safety or calm or whatever it is that we need to, try and allay the fears and anxiety about things that are outside of our control. So a lot of those things has kind of helped create a regular routine, and I've been more productive and more creative in the latter half of this year than, many years put together previously, by kind of just setting up this habit and then this routine, and hopefully we'll continue to do so. It gets a little bit trickier as the more work that I have kind of piled on my plate, which is always a good thing because we have to pay the bills and we have to eat food.
Right.
But now that we're shifting into wintertime, it's been snowing for the last 2 days here in Utah, which is where I'm at. So it makes it a little bit harder to go in the backyard and write for a couple hours when it's, 30 degrees. So, I'm having to adjust for winter. And then, I think my kids are in physical school at the time being, but Utah's cases are really, really bad. And there's a potential that at some point they shift back to online learning. So again, just kind of having that flexibility and understanding like this is a time that we have not seen in our lifetimes. And we have to be flexible and we have to be understanding with our circumstances, our scenarios, and ourselves. That's, some days you're not going to get a lot done. But you know what? That's okay. Take that time, take a break, use that to recharge, focus on something else that's maybe, I mean, not that maybe that is more important. Check in on family, check in on friends, and then kind of, approach tomorrow as a new day.
We did a labor and delivery tour before our daughter was born of the hospital we went to just to learn where stuff was and get a little familiar with it. And the nurse that ran it, I remember her phrasing was something like, "Well, you just got to be ready to give out to the universe whatever it's going to give you," which I always liked how she kind of phrased that because having a kid is it's got so many unknowns at the end of the day, and it's can be long and take a while, and you get to the other side, maybe a year later, and you sleep again and realize, oh, that's what that's like. But I think your perspective of figuring out what works and having that flexibility built in, we've done that at our house too, and very similar to what you have. It just was this evolving. How is this going to work? Okay, how is this going to balance? And I really do think having separate areas set up, if you have the space, can go a long way. And maybe that is just, hey, go out and take a walk. And there's a woman on our street that works in the mental health field, and she is constantly walking. And she's got kids at home and, her spouse, but I see her out all the time and I envy her in a way because she gets to walk everywhere. So she gets to nail that exercise component, but also obviously, do her work and be able to do that. And, I think for me, a lot of big changes has just been trying to do smaller chunks at a time, to do more breaks, which I've always been pretty bad at. I'll go for a couple hours and why am I so tired now? And realize like, oh, you haven't moved from what you're doing for 3 hours, so you need to change it up. But I think there's a lot to what you said too about just recognizing it and giving yourself that moment to say like, hey, you didn't get it done this week. A lot of people aren't getting it done this week. It's not a contest. It's not a race. And especially folks getting into comics, I think there's so many different bumps along the way that you could run into that could slow you down. But the added bonus of an industry in flux and all the changes therein, it can be daunting. I think just hearing you kind of detail what you've done and are doing career-wise, it's encouraging to hear how much you are getting done and that there are, different avenues and options. And I think the shakeup of seeing what happened at a distribution level and at a publisher level really has made folks think differently and be aware of different options. And you all having such a great comic that you'd already done the work on, and Yeah, I'm not sure the origins of if you just wanted to do house and get it out there, or why it came into being. But you guys had it's a really thick trade. Like it's a great bang for your buck kind of situation. So you obviously put time into it, and it's a great, you know, it's a very moody horror suspense kind of story. And it's a very easy sell when you see the title and read the log line. Like, you guys clearly put in the work, and it was, you know, fortuitous in a lot of ways to have it. But at the same time, you know, it makes me think, like, well, yeah, do your own thing. You can hand sell it at conventions. It can be a calling card. You told the story you wanted to tell. At the end of the day, if you got the story out, what a win. But in your case, you had it out, and now it sounds like it's gotten so many, you know, additional eyeballs on it because you were able to hustle for that opportunity too.
Yeah, I mean, we could do an entire podcast just on this book alone, but because I mean, it's a very much a benchmark book in my career, and I didn't realize it would be. It's funny. So when we got the email from the publisher approving us to they wanted to print it, it was nearly 10 years from the day that Drew and I started working on the book. We met in October 2010, and we started working on the book shortly thereafter. And it was, I mean, the first issue didn't come out digitally until October 2017, I think. It was 7 years in the making between, you know, a couple of years of me writing it and then rewriting it, and then a couple of years of Drew drawing it. And at various stages, we would pitch it to publishers. There was a handful of publishers at the time that it got, and there was, you know, couple that were super interested, and I think IDW, it got all the way to final approvals before they decided to pass on it. And after multiple rounds of kind of this, every time we'd reapproach it, we just decided we didn't need anyone else's permission to make the book. We were just going to make the book and put it out there. So Drew and I joke and laugh that it is the book that was, you know, created out of, it was willed into being by sheer force and sheer stubbornness. Like, this book was going to come out no matter how much people didn't want it. And you know, it did. Like, we released it digitally on Comixology, then we kickstarted it, then we printed it, and then it's just kind of, you know, it's the little book that could. It's gotten, you know, the reviews that it's got have all been very, very positive. And, you know, we can look at the book, and it's a book that I started writing in 2010 and he started drawing in 2014. And there's things that today we would now approach differently because we, you know, have more experience and more skill. But at the same time, it's not something we can ever be like, oh, I didn't try hard enough on that book.
Right, right.
Like, we are very proud of the work that went into it. And we, you know, we've been slow working on a sequel for a couple of years now, and it's just scheduling wise, it'll be a couple more years probably until we can lock it down. But it's, you know, it's something we decided to do and put it out there. And it's, there's a lot of good that's come about it. In addition to just having it out there and having the story completed, I, you know, have gotten a Hollywood agent because of it that has led to other, you know, projects we're working on, and, you know, just a lot of different things. And now we're excited next year to see it, you know, kind of released wide. And to hit to reach a new audience that it hasn't previously. So yeah, I think for those who are listening out there who are in various stages of careers and trying to figure out what's the right move, or what do I do next, or how do I get my stories out there, and like there's no one that's stopping you from doing that except yourself. Drew and I met. He had just graduated art school. I was just starting art school. We had zero credits to our name and would not have any credits to our name for quite a few years afterwards. And we just got it done. We invested in it. You know, I think within the next few months, we will finally break even on the book. We invested in colors, we invested in letters, and things like that. And, you know, it's been a multi-year process, but we knew, like, when we have this book, we will have this book, and nothing will ever take that away. And yeah, I mean, like, of all the things I've done, that's just a small sliver, but at the same time, it's a book that both of us are supremely proud of. The fact that, you know, it exists because we refuse to let it not exist.
Well, the attention, I think the attention and care is obvious in it too. And it's such a fun, you know, it's one of those comics that I don't think you have to be a fan of horror comics to be into. And I know sometimes we search for stuff by genre, but I guess with, I don't know if you've watched Ted Lasso, but
I am dying to watch Ted Lasso. Everyone loves it to death. And I just haven't had a chance to like carve out some space for it.
Yeah. I watched the first three episodes. I got Apple TV because I had to buy a new phone. And I watched the Tom Hanks World War II boat movie, and I was like, yep, that's all that's on Apple TV. And then I saw one of the producers tweeting about it the day it was launched. And I was like, well, I liked Scrubs. I guess I'll try this. And then, you know, binge the first three episodes. Like, oh, episode three, like this is going to be one of my favorite shows ever if it can sustain this. And anyway, the thing that I keep saying to my wife, because you see it so often, people will say something like, you know, I'm not into sports, but I like Ted Lasso. And I feel like that's saying like, you know, I'm not into bars in Boston where people sit around and drink, but I really like Cheers. It's one of those things where I think, this is my long-winded way of saying, when a story in a genre that might not be your jam comes along, there's so many great stories and so many different genres that you don't look for. And I think that's still one of the things I love most about comics. And Kickstarter's been great for that. Conventions are obviously great for that, for walking around and talking to people, and those aren't happening now. But that it's all of what you said about you can make that thing that, you know, is your thing. And it's that funny inversion of the more it seems like the specificity of the thing that you're talking about might not relate to people because it's about a college football coach moving to London to coach a premier soccer team. It's all about the rest of that story and those characters that people are able to get onto. So it's that inverse of, well, yeah, it's nothing like my life, but it's totally like my life. Like it's that thing where I think comics can be so encouraging to you doing your thing. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes feels like, well, nobody's going to want to read this, but it's great to hear a story like the perseverance that you all are talking about in getting the book out there. And it's very spooky. So if you do like horror, hey, it's even more your jam.
we try to hit a couple genres, obviously horror, so Halloween, but the book actually takes place on December 22nd, 1944. So it's a Christmas book too. So in time for the holidays, you can get your copy.
Also historical. Yeah, there's a lot going on in it. And,
yep.
You know, the other reality that you touched on is investing in the coloring, investing in, you're just getting it done, and that can be a big investment, and a lot of times those are what lead to calling cards. I know I've been around folks that are different parts of their career that started doing comics with around the same time that, you know, somebody will say, wow, this looks great, how did you get this? And they're like, well, I paid for it. And you know, it's a reality that sometimes I don't know folks face, and sometimes you don't. Sometimes there are people that pitch in and you do a thing together, and you know, it's all what works. Well, moving forward, because you've touched on any number of things as far as how things have changed up and moving forward, I don't know if there's any kind of, not that we need to put a bow on it, but any kind of, you know, wrap up moving forward that you're thinking about as far as where your work's going to go, or just thinking about in general, you know, how to keep the comics coming.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think for the time being, and, you know, this changes on project and opportunity, but I would like a lot of my focus to be a little bit more on graphic novels. Obviously, my gigantic tome that I'm working on is a graphic novel. It will not be a monthly book, but in writing it, I structured it entirely like a novel. It's not broken down with 22-page climaxes and things like that. It's very much supposed to be an unspooling story. I'm working on another project right now, which I'm like maybe will be announced next year. It really depends on the year, but it's a graphic novel project where I'm working adapting a script that was a TV show pilot into a comic book for a publisher. But again, I'm getting to approach the medium from a larger form, knowing that this will be, you know, this one will be 88 pages, so it'll be shorter than my 600 pages. But just, you know, looking at telling stories a little bit of a in a different way than the monthly comic books. And people I talk to in publishing, you know, in the book market, be it through novels or just graphic novels, they did not experience the disruption that monthly comic books did. Because, you know, in books, you usually solicit a book a year to a year and a half in advance. There's a very long pipeline of product. You know, a lot of people needed books to read when they were trapped in their house. And so they were hitting up online retailers or local bookstores or things like that. Like the demand for that type of product was very, very high. So, you know, just kind of looking at the disruptions that happened with Diamond, the individual difficulties retailers faced, not only in kind of the environment they were in, but as other publishers tried to pivot away to alternative distribution models. I think you saw, you know, DC obviously left Diamond. There was a couple different attempts for other publishers to shift distributors so they could get books to retailers. And all of those moves across the board were generally met with a lot of resistance and anger from retailers. And now I'm not a retailer, so I'm not going to speak to the validity of those. They had probably had some very valid points as to why those systems wouldn't work. But just looking at that, going like, there are just, a minor, I mean, minor in the fact that one company had a distribution, crippled a majority of the industry. And when the industry tried to find solutions for this temporary problem, it was met with intense amounts of resistance from the retailers. And so I just saw lots of issues with this system that I was like, okay, what can I as an individual creator focus on that can potentially avoid some of these catastrophic distributions? And I mean, looking at graphic novels and OGNs, both as a distribution model and additionally as a storytelling device, like I can tell a story a very different way in a 100-page graphic novel as opposed to like a 5-issue miniseries, which works out to be about 100 pages. So and it depends on the project. Like Triage was meant to be a serialized story. It was meant to be read issue at a time. It was very much created to have that comic book serialized feel. I still think it works in trade just fine, but it was one of those like I think it needs to be this structure going forward. I want to focus on things that are a little bit larger, have a little bit more book or film type structure to them, and to take advantage of the channels of distribution of to getting those to consumers that are not as affected by these disruptions and kind of whatnot. Like I'm not trying to speak as an expert. I'm just like as me
Sure.
looking what I saw. I was like, okay, what can I do to hopefully avoid this? Because Triage was another book that was released as a trade right at the right as stores started to come out of the COVID thing. And by virtue of having 8 weeks of trades built up, the publisher released all the trades that they had not been able to release during that time, kind of in 1 week or two, and it just got buried under a variety of other things. So I don't think the sales on that have been particularly good. Whereas had it come out a little bit earlier, potentially people could have had it ordered and or read it during the time when nothing else new was coming out. So those are some of the kind of things that I think that I'm going to focus on. And then just, carving out time and opportunities to create my own things. Like I don't know if I'll print up Fight Zine. I might. Maybe for cons, just kind of hand sell something fun. But I mean, I threw it up on Gumroad and have a bunch of people have downloaded and a handful have decided to, pay for it. And I'm like, that's cool. It was not my intention, nor was it my goal to make any money. It was like, I just want to do this as a fun experiment in storytelling. And I got a positive response and just put it out there. That's how Paradox started, another creator-owned book that I did. And I think just I'm trying to always look for opportunities to just tell the stories I want to tell, and then find ways to get them out there instead of entirely being dependent on, work for hire stuff. I try and kind of balance out one work for hire versus one creator owned. And at some point, creator owned will actually make me money, but in the meantime, work for hire will kind of help supplant those different experiments in the style and in the medium.
For sure. And you've got Intro to Visual Storytelling coming up with Comics Experience
Do yes.
relatively soon in January. And if you want to look at more of what that all entails, it's comicsexperience.com. And that's a 6-week course with you. And that's, of course, all online, like all the Comics Experience classes have been for years now. And that's another way to obviously get some insight into the visual side of stuff, but I'm sure, just in general, you'll talk about making comics as a whole.
Yeah, very much so. It's my favorite class to teach, which is good because it's the class I teach most often. But it is not a class for artists. It's a class for those people who are wanting to make comics. So I've had writers, I've had editors, I've had colorists, I've had a variety of people, and some people are just interested in learning just different skills or how different industries work. It's more so about what language do we use in comics to tell a story, and how does that differ, and what are the things that we need to consider when we approach things. So I've had, quite a few writers take the course to understand, like, as I write, what do I need to be considering? How do I need to be seeing this? What can I write for my artist in order to create a great book? And it's very much kind of the foundational fundamentals of storytelling and how we make conscious choices to create and evoke specific emotions in storytelling. And it's the intro course. There are courses that kind of go deeper into this further on.
Sure.
I think maybe in late 2021, we'll be doing the Storytelling Masterclass, which is more an advanced level stuff. But it's a great class for anyone just interested in comics. You don't have to have any talent or skill whatsoever. This is not a class where I critique your anatomy skills or your perspective. I'll hopefully give you some pointers, but at the same time, like, the focus is on, like, what images are you using to tell a story? And if you're going to tell them with stick figures, awesome. That doesn't matter at all as to your drawing ability. It's how you visualize a story.
Right. And you're coming away with having done a full, you know, multi-page comic from it too. That's the other thing that I always love about all the comics experience stuff, is there is that tangible outcome where you take theory to practice and then here's my thing. And it's so informing.
Yeah, exactly. In this course, you'll do a 3 to 4 page sequential sequence. And then a kind of a cover image to include with that. We try and make sure that at the end of the course, you have an actual portfolio piece that you can use if you choose to.
Excellent. Well, where should folks go to find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, I mean, kind of my main hub of everything is just my website. It's philipcv.com, philipcvy.com. I'm on Twitter at philipcv and Instagram at philipcvcomicart. But, you know, I one of the nice things about this year is, like, you know, there are certain things I realized about social media that are great, and certain things I'm like, you know what, I might be able to not have to do this for a while. But yeah, like, the website kind of has a lot of basic information. It also has a link to my store where you can get copies of The House or Paradox. And then Twitter, I think, is where I'm active the most in between art and angry political posts. And then Instagram is just, you know, pictures. So, you know, depending on where you fall in the spectrum of what you want to look at, there's a couple different avenues to access me for the time being.
Lots of different ways. And you got a great back catalog that folks can check out too, including things like your Tomb Raider run, amongst others, mm-hmm. and obviously The House and Triage and whatever else you have in the pipe that will be announced when it's appropriate. I know.
Yeah, it'll be announced at some point. So.
Excellent. Well, if you have a question you want to hear talked about on the show, you can email info@comicsexperience and we'll talk about it. Philip, thanks for doing this and taking time, and maybe we can check in again in another, do the math, 6 to 8 months and see where things are.
No, yeah, thanks for having me back on. I'm happy to do it, and I would love to check back in, in the future. And hopefully things are looking better than they were, or they are.
Absolutely. Well, until next time, keep wearing your mask, washing your hands, and keep making comics.